That's our goal. I can see my team making the playoffs with Coach Fizz and his new style of play and his attention to detail and holding everyone accountable. I feel we can get there.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We are back with another season preview podcast. Today we're going to be looking at the New York Knicks, a team with lots of opportunity for some fantasy stars to emerge. And to talk about the New York Knicks, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Knicks podcast. It is James Marceta. James, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Josh.
James jumped on last year and did the Knicks preview. It's going to be a slightly different scenario this year. I think we did the show last year before the Carmelo Anthony trade had gone down, so things are obviously wildly different from then. James, we've got lots to talk about in today's show. Michael Bolton's ready.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it. We'll start with a projected record for this team. James, I asked this question of all the hosts. You put down the 538 Carmelo projection, which is fitting, I guess. 25 and 50-70. Vegas over under is 30.5. Where do you sit between those two numbers?
I think they're under the Vegas over under. I mean, anytime you try to predict these kind of situations, like with anything in sports, there's probabilities, right? So I think there is a very slim chance they could be something approaching a 500 team, but I'd put that at definitely less than 10%, like easily. And for me, I think they're somewhere in between 20 and 30 wins, depending on the vagaries of chance and how well Fizz can get them to play together, how much some of their rookies surprise. But I personally would be very surprised if they won more than 30 games.
Yeah, I think I'm in that same sort of boat. But that doesn't mean that there's not fantasy numbers to come out, because teams are still going to be scoring 95, 98, 100, 105 points per game. They're going to be giving up a lot of those, but numbers are still going to be achieved. So we've got to try and figure out who's going to be getting those points and rebounds and assists and steals and blocks and how all this situation is going to shake out in New York. The projected leading scorer for this team, of course, with Kristaps Porzingis sidelined.
Porzingis.
You've gone with Timmy Hardaway as the leading scorer on this team. I think that's a fair bet. I don't really see anyone coming close to that. What sort of role do you think Hardaway is going to take on? Is he going to be, do you view him as the best player on this team at the moment?
Yes, I think I do. I mean, I definitely think last year he was their number two scorer, behind Porzingis, per game averages. He had about 17.5 last year, and he had really poor, his percentage from downtown was really bad. So his efficiency wasn't good. He shot something like 31.7% from three last year. He's not a great 3-point shooter, but there were a lot of mitigating circumstances that went into that that make me think he's definitely going to be at least around like 34-35%. As a veteran guy on this team, unlike Knicks teams of the past, it's very youth-oriented this year. Lots of young guys. He's going to be looked to carry a real heavy scoring load. I mean, other candidates would be someone like an Enes Kanter, depending on how many minutes he gets. Trey Burke, I think, actually might have a lot more in the tank offensively than some people do. Defense is a different question. And then you have the kind of like the dark horse might be a Kevin Knox. I mean, he's a rookie. I think he's going to be inefficient, but I think he's going to have every chance to put up big numbers and play decent minutes. So there's a chance that he could sneak in and kind of challenge for team lead in scoring, but I'd be surprised if that happened. And I think it's really going to be Hardaway's, crown to lose, so to speak.
He did shoot 31.7% from three last year. You were spot on with that one. The previous three seasons, he'd been at 34, 34, and 36%. So while he did take on somewhat of a larger role, his usage didn't actually spike that much from his last season in Atlanta, where he was at 22.9% usage. This season, he went up to 23.5%. So yeah, he did play an extra 6 minutes per game, but he was basically using the exact same amount of possessions per game. So that's not, sometimes you increase usage and it sees your efficiency dip quite a bit. That's not necessarily the case of what happened with Hardaway. Yeah, he was probably focused on a little bit more, but I think some of it also has to do with the fact that he started the season absolutely horrendously, and everyone who did draft him in fantasy be aware of that. And they were dropping him like he was, I don't even know, like some sort of, you know, off-smelling sack of shit. And he was gone straight away because he couldn't hit 40% of his shots for about the first five or six games. And that was never going to stick. I don't even think he hit like maybe more than one or two threes in those first couple of games. He just couldn't do anything. And then it started to come around. And then when he was starting to play well, that's when he had the leg fracture, which cost him basically all of December. And then eased his way back in. So I do agree with you with Hardaway this season. Yahoo's got him ranked at the 64th best player. It's probably a little bit aggressive. I'm not sure that he's necessarily that high of a guy. He was 85th last season. I could see him maybe jumping into the top 80, maybe being a top 75 guy. But I think for him to do that, he needs to show more of what he did in Atlanta in terms of that ball handling, which wasn't really the case with New York last season. I don't think it's going to be the case this season again, James, just because of the Trey Burke, Frank Ntilikina backcourt pairing. Or do you think he's going to take on more of a lead guard without being a point guard sort of role?
Well, I think one thing that's going to benefit him this year is Fizdale said that he did think the Knicks small forward platoon last year was too small.
Yep.
And that was mostly Hardaway with some Courtney Lee too. So he's figuring to play a lot more minutes of the two. Although I think Fizdale's going to have a lot of different combinations. He says positionless basketball ad nauseum, which I'm a fan of. But it's hard to say now exactly what the rotation is going to be. But I do think he's going to be in a more comfortable spot for him, and I do think he is going to be looked upon as their main scoring threat. Like I think that's going to repeat. Now, hopefully he stays free of injury. I do think he's the kind of player where being the number one option doesn't suit him so much. I just don't think he's that kind of guy. I don't think that's why they signed him. So when teams can game plan for him, I think he can struggle a little bit. But I'm hopeful that he won't face the same injury problems. They don't seem to be things that are recurring, like a back or, you know, like a kind of a leg injury. Like he had a stress fracture. Like that, as far as I know, isn't something that kind of like haunts players throughout their careers. And I just think he's going to be, I think he pressed a lot. There was a lot made out of his contract. I think he felt like he had to live up to it. So all these other things that were going on, Kristaps being out, his injury, playing out of position. Kristaps is still out, but hopefully he's helpful. Hopefully he's in position. Hopefully he's a year more comfortable, like having that large contract for the Knicks. I expect
three more left.
Solid play out of him.
Just three more seasons left on that contract. That's it, James. Not that long to go. Now,
player option on the fourth.
Oh yeah, I wonder if he'll take that one. Let's let's actually talk about
percentages.
Now, it's the question that most people want to know in terms of this team for fantasy: is it when we can expect him back? I'll start by asking you this question: do you put the over under of games played by Kristaps Porzingis at? If I put it at 30, which way do you go?
I mean, I hope it's under for the sake of, you know, being a Knicks fan. That seems about right. I mean, that seems like a good over-under. And I don't think he's coming back before Christmas. I think Christmas is too early. I think, you know, if they were smart, like, you know, the second he's announced ready, they should still take a little bit of time. He's going to be on a big minutes restriction. But yeah, I don't, it's tough. He's got this, he's kind of dubbed himself the Lizard. I don't know who else calls him that, but he claims people call him that, and he can like recover really quickly. He is really young. Last year he had this. It looked like his foot fell off. He twisted his ankle so bad. Yeah, and he came back like that game or the next game. He left that game, but so I mean, there's some anecdotal evidence to suggest he can come back from injuries pretty well, but it is a torn ACL. If I had to put money on it, I would put it on the under. But I'm a little. This is one of the things that I don't know what to expect. You hear a bunch of different things. It's really kind of tough to put your finger on it. But I think it would be very surprising if he came back before January.
He did the ACL in January last season. The year before, we got two ACLs to compare it to in Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker. Parker took basically exactly 12 months to return, but of course that's That's a second ACL. LaVine was about 11 months. I think he did at the start of February and he returned middle of January. So he was about 11 months. But of course, we're talking about Porzingis, who is 7-8 inches taller than these guys. So maybe recovery might be a little bit slower. And of course, there is absolutely zero need for the Knicks, who could be one of the worst teams in the NBA, or could at this point could be one of the bottom three teams in the NBA. There's no need to rush him back. And even when they do, he will sit out games. He will rest games. He will play lower minutes. LaVine only played 27 minutes a night last year. Parker played 24 minutes a night. So in terms of when we're looking at Porzingis for fantasy, we know that he can be a top 20 type of guy when he's playing his 34 minutes and getting his 32% usage and scoring his 22 points. But those things aren't going to happen because he's not going to come back. He's not going to play 33 or 34 minutes. He's not going to play in every game. So maybe you take him outside the top 100 if you've got an injured reserve spot and you can put him there. But otherwise, you're going to be sitting on zeros for 2, 3, 4 months maybe. And then even when he comes back, you get him to play in 75% of the games that he's available for. It's just not going to be worth it in most type of situations. But if you're looking long-term past this season into next season, then you do have an opportunity to get him at a real discount in dynasty type formats. But in terms of this season, you know what? People will look at, oh yeah, man, what if he's back for my fantasy playoffs? It won't be the same Porzingis. It's just not going to be the same guy this year as last year. There's just no way, unless by miracles Tim Hardaway is correct and they are competing for the playoffs. But even then, I don't see them being that cavalier with their stars' health.
No, and like you said, they have nothing to play for, but they've kind of said it in the way that a front office is allowed to say it. You know, they're like, wins and losses aren't the ultimate thing. We're developing our youth, which is exactly what you want to hear if you're a Knicks fan.
Of course.
But, I mean, they're giving the language of tanking. So I think they're going to be really cautious with them, super cautious.
Another injury that people probably don't give a shit about at all is rugged Ronnie Baker and his shoulder, which cost him most of last season. He is back for this year. Is there any update on his shoulder, or will he even actually make the roster? Because there's whispers around that they may cut him before the season starts.
I think he's going to make the roster. I think I haven't heard anything about him not being back for the start of preseason. So I think he's going to be fully healthy. The thing about him is, there's a couple things. First of all, his contract, he's making about, I think it's like $4.5 million, something like that this year. And so even when you look at like a Luke Kornet or a Noah Vonleh, like Vonleh's not fully guaranteed. Kornet's making like $1 million a year. I think one of those guys would probably get cut before him. And I might be the last Ron Baker stan on earth, but I actually think he's no good for fantasy, but I think he is a good 5-on-5 basketball player. Like he would come out in these lineups with Frank Ntilikina and they would shut other teams down. Can he do that for an entire game as a starter? No. As a bench guy for like 15 minutes, is he valuable? Can he provide a spark? Does he keep the ball moving? You know, does he know when to shoot or when to pass? Can he make that shot? That's a different question, but I think he's a smart player. I think he's a hard-nosed defender. He does get a decent number of steals when he gets minutes. I think he's going to be on the team.
I think he is too. I think he'll probably get that, you know, 14th or 15th spot on the roster. But let's go to a player who does play the same position, a guy that you, James, had listed as a breakout candidate for this season, mm-hmm. and that is last year's lottery pick, and that is Frank Ntilikina, who struggled his way through his rookie season. I still thought he showed quite good signs. I think he's one of the best defensive point guards in the NBA already. He only played 22 minutes a night and scored 6 points. 32% from three is not great. It's also not horrendous. 36% from the field is, but he averaged over 3 assists, almost a steal per game. The number one question that we want to know about Ntilikina is, do you think he has the inside track to be the starting point guard? And does that mean 29 minutes, or is it a 25-23 type of split situation with Trey Burke or, heaven forbid, Emmanuel Mudiay?
I think there's no chance that Mudiay,
thank you,
takes that spot. I just don't see him as an NBA player. If Fizdale turns Mudiay into a functional bench piece, I think he's the best coach in the history of basketball. I just don't. I have nothing against the guy, but I don't see anything from him that tells me that he's going to contribute in a meaningful way to winning basketball. So I think that's out of the question.
Shout out to ESPN for having Mudiay ranked as their 46th best fantasy player.
From this season?
Yeah, for this season. For this coming season, they have him ranked as the 46th guy. I have no idea what's going on over there. I could say that for many different things, but yeah, that's probably the most egregious thing I've seen from them this season, to have him as the 46th best player. So yeah, I'm glad you put that one to rest. But let's get back to Ntilikina. Is he going to be the main minutes getter at point guard?
Well, so here's the thing. I think he will have every opportunity to win that starting spot. I think what you're at risk of seeing this year is not too much progress on the offensive side from him. And I don't think that means that he's going to have a bad career. I'm kind of sick of saying this, but you know, he's still only 19 years old. And he's long. He's tall for a point guard. He's 6'5". They say he grew an inch last year. I think he's shown a lot of flashes of offensive ability, but as of, you know, the end of last season and from what we saw in summer league, he had one awful game, one really good game. It's kind of anyone's bet how far he's going to progress offensively. Defensively, like you said, I think he's one of the best point guards in the league already defensively. He's borderline elite in some situations. He was a great pick and roll defender last year. As good as he is defensively, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that Burke approaches that level offensively. Now, he shot a ridiculous number for mid-range last year, but if you watched him play, he wasn't getting lucky and jacking up contested shots. It was in control in the flow of the game. I was really impressed with how he played just as a point guard and ran the team offensively. I thought he knew when to look for guys. I thought he ran a pick and roll really well. I thought he knew when to look for his own shot if other guys weren't, you know, getting it knocked down, which was frequently the case on the Knicks. They had basically no offensive players after, you know, KP went down last year. I think a lot of his offensive success is sustainable. So what I'm not sure of is what Fizdale is going to value the most. He says it's defense. We heard the same thing from Hornacek last year, which just all his lineup decisions flew in the face of him saying that he valued defense the most. And Burke is a very bad defensive player, even though I do think he tries very hard. He's just so small. He gets caught on screens all the time, not for want of trying to fight over them, but you can push him around. He just physically doesn't really have the tools to be a decent defender. So it's like, how much is Frank going to – I think there's a realistic chance that Frank Ntilikina could average like 12 to 14 points a game with like five assists. I think there's a realistic chance that he could average 8 points a game. It's going to be really interesting to see. And one of his big problems is aggressiveness. I think he's got more tools than he's sort of at times comfortable using. He comes from this European style of play where it's much more system oriented and point guards are supposed to kind of like, by and large, you know, get the team into their motion offense and kick it off. You'll see kind of sometimes Ntilikina has these lanes to the hoop and he doesn't take them and he passes off. I love his willingness to get his teammates involved. I think he actually has great vision. It's really underrated because sometimes he struggles a little bit with turnovers and tries to do a little bit too much. As a rookie, you know, especially as a 19-year-old rookie in the league last year, I think that's really understandable. I am really conflicted on who's going to get these starting minutes. I kind of think it's going to be Burke at first because I think he's going to show more poise. Like when you're offensively and when your point guard has trouble getting the team into their offense, like everything can kind of like snowball in terms of people's confidence and it gets frustrating. So earlier in the year, I think Burke's going to start. I think Frank's going to get it at some point. But I'm not sure. He's so young. There's a lot up in the air there.
He's a guy that can come in, Ntilikina this is, and give you five assists and maybe give you 1.5 steals. And that on its own can be valuable if you're not looking at the scoring. But if that comes along and he does get you those 12 points, then there is value. So I think that either of these guys are worth looking at in terms of a last round pick. I probably personally would go with Burke. It's interesting you mentioned that the mid-range and the two-point shooting stuff. It was really, really high from him last season. The three-point percentage was quite low, though, and that's something he'd been quite good at in the past. So if those two things balance out, maybe his efficiency stays at the same level. I always do have hesitancy when someone comes in and is knocking down 56% of their two-pointers. Like, oh, that maybe isn't going to stick, but
he was like 98th percentile or something last year.
He did a similar thing in the G League as well. And someone like a guy who also did the same sort of thing was Quinn Cook with the Warriors. He came in and he was banging in 42% of his threes and 52% of his twos. Well, what's going on here? But he'd done it all season for the Santa Cruz Warriors. He was doing it there as well. And Burke was the same with Westchester. He was going in and he was hitting these shots at a huge percentage. And while the quality level is different, when you translate it over and you do it for a fair chunk of games like Burke did, you got to think, well, maybe there is something real here. Maybe he has learned to be efficient, something he hadn't ever been able to do in his previous stints in Utah and in Washington. So both those guys are worthy late round picks for fantasy. I give Burke the slight nod ahead, but it could go with either of them. And it's just going to depend as to which way Fizdale goes. And again, it could change multiple times during the season when things go wrong or things aren't working the way they want them to work and players have slumps and all that sort of stuff. So it's quite a fluid situation. The two-way guys on this team at the moment, James, we've got Alonzo Trier, and Isaiah Hicks. We saw Hicks and Cornette play a fair amount down the stretch last season. Do you think that we're going to see Fizdale use these guys in a similar situation, especially with injuries early on to Porzingis? Are these guys going to be used probably more often than some other teams use their two-way spots?
I don't really think Hicks brings much. I don't think he's going to see much time. The one thing that might change that is if they do keep Noah throughout the season and don't stretch him, the Knicks only have 14 guys on the roster then. Yep. So he might see a little bit more play. I'm not a big fan of his. I don't think he brings much to the table. I don't expect him to get a lot of minutes. I think Trier's interesting. He was kind of all over the place in summer league, but he's an interesting prospect to me. I think he's got a pretty good handle for a shooting guard. I think he showed the ability to kind of fill up the box score a little bit the last couple of games. Again, this is summer league, but for someone who we don't have any kind of NBA reps for, I could see with the way that this Knicks team figures to play over the course of the season, which I do expect them to be one of the 3-5 kind of worst teams by record, I could see Trier getting a decent chunk of minutes.
I think he's not a bad guy to have a look at as well, especially long term. We're talking about backup shooting guard minutes here, whether it's Courtney Lee, who probably isn't going to be on the team all season. You've got Damian Dotson, a second round pick from the year before. So there is an opportunity there at some point for him to move into some minutes. So he's someone to watch more for really deep formats and for dynasty leagues. But I think he's one of the top or upper echelon two-way guys across the NBA, along with Jalen Adams in Atlanta, two of the two-way guys who I do really like as rookies who could provide something. So he's interesting in that regard for this coming season and for his career. Now, James, when we're looking at this team, the Knicks are probably the most covered team in the NBA for a team that's not great. But is there anything that is there anything that for this team that gets maybe misrepresented, that's perhaps not accurate, whether it's a style of play, whether it's discussions, whether it's an opinion on a player? Is there anything that goes maybe unnoticed with this team?
The first thing that jumps to mind is just the front office isn't a complete joke anymore. Okay. As far as on court, I don't know. I think they're pretty fairly represented, but they've been doing smart or at least not egregiously dumb stuff since Scott Perry came on board. So like that narrative, I think, is a little ridiculous. Like, oh, the Knicks at it again, doing something dumb. But I don't know. Well, I think they've been pretty fairly covered by and large. There are, like you said, there are so many people giving Knicks opinions, and some of them are pretty bad, but there's enough people out there that I think they get it pretty right. I think it's just going to be really interesting to see what kind of coach Fizdale is in this situation and what kind of minutes he gives to people. Like, I would prefer that Enes Kanter not get a lot of minutes. I don't think he's a big part of their future. I don't think they're going to re-sign him after his contract is up. So that's one big question that I have. Like, how much are they going to rely on him? How much are they going to try to get Mitchell Robinson in there? That remains to be seen. But I would say, you know what? Now that I'm kind of like tossing a couple ideas out there, I think Frank Ntilikina is way more maligned than he should be. I think he's a much better prospect than almost anyone outside of the Knicks universe gives credit for. And if not this year, then certainly in the next couple of years, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. He does get quite a lot of shit for being terrible and a bust and all this sort of stuff. When, again, he's young, he's long, he's a very, very, very good defender already, and there are other parts of his game that will come around. So I do agree with that. But I want to talk Kanter now. You did bring him up. He finished last season as the 54th ranked player in under 26 minutes per game. Without Porzingis around, I assume that he played maybe a little bit more this season just because you need someone that can actually score on this team and can be that option. Do you think it goes the other way?
I think if Fizdale is serious about making people earn their minutes on the defensive end, he may play fewer minutes. But it does become a thing where at some point you just need to kind of like stop the bleeding and be competitive. And even though I think Kanter is in many ways a big net negative, you do need to put points on the board, like you said. So I think if some things break, like if Mitchell Robinson, he has great physical tools, but he hasn't played organized basketball against other teams that, are well coached. He's only played organized basketball against high schoolers. So we really don't know what he's going to do when he comes in against an NBA team. If he comes in and looks great, they don't have to give as many minutes to Kanter. If Knox comes in and looks great, and that takes off some of the scoring load of someone like Kanter, they don't have to give as many minutes to Kanter. So I do think there's I think there's a good chance that Kanter plays the same or less minutes. I hate to keep doing this to you and your fans who are trying to get fantasy advice, but I would almost put it like 50-50 at how likely it is that he gets more playing time or less. I could see it going either way.
I think most people are aware that, that the Kanter bet is always a risky one. If he plays 29 minutes per night, he's a top 40 type of a guy because of his elite percentages. He is one of the best offensive centers in the NBA. He's one of the best offensive rebounders, if not the best, outside of maybe Andre Drummond, offensive rebounder. So he's going to get you big rebound numbers. He's going to score. He's going to shoot an excellent free throw percentage. He's going to be really high in his field goal percentage. And all that adds up to a ton of value, but it's going to come down to minutes. If it's 28, then he easily surpasses Yahoo's rank of 73. If he plays 23 minutes, then he's probably on the back end of that. But he is a guy, again, if he plays 23 a night, he'll still be a top 100 guy just because of the volume of scoring, the rebounding, and both of those percentages. I know he doesn't get any steals. I know he doesn't get any blocks, but those other numbers are just so big that they're going to come.
Bears mentioning, I don't believe in this, that it's going to work out, but he has been asked to work on his three-point shot. There's been footage of him working on his three-point shot. When I look at his form, I don't think it's really going to be successful, but you never know. I just want to point that out to people who might be curious. He is going to jack some threes this year.
He's had a go.
I don't know what percentage he'll shoot.
I think he did it one season in Utah where he was taking some threes there. It didn't necessarily work fantastically, but he's had some moments. Like he had a 36% season when he was at OKC and Utah, and then the next year he shot 48% from three, but it was on very, very limited attempts, 0.3 per game.
Like 25 or
so if he gets that volume up, we'll see. But it is definitely, he's one of those guys where you go, it's a possibility. Whereas someone like Mitchell Robinson, if he starts taking threes, I'm not really sure that that'll necessarily be something that's likely to occur on this team. Let's talk about that player most likely to be traded, Courtney Lee, before or after Christmas.
If it happens, I think it's after Christmas. I think some team gets, if it's going to happen, I think some team might get desperate with like an injury or something like that. But he makes a lot of money. And I think he's overrated personally at this stage in his career.
So. He's also been quite pissy about complaining about stuff over the last couple of years. The Knicks put out their promotional material and he wasn't on it. And I think he gave the side eyes emoji towards it. That seems to be an indication that he's not in their plan. Fizdale, came out and said that we didn't like that combination at the three. That means he's going to be moving to a much smaller role behind Tim Hardaway this season without starting at the three. So last year he played 30 minutes a night, I think. Over 30 minutes a night. He's not going to get anywhere near that this season. Yeah, he might be down to 20 a night. He's a guy that does need big minutes to be a contributor. And his real value comes in the fact that he's quite an efficient shooter, especially from the line and from three, but he doesn't do anything else. So his numbers, they're going to drop off quite considerably this year. But what that does is that takes us into maybe a guy who could be moving into that vacant starting small forward spot. And it's the guy that the Knicks took in the draft at pick number 9. It's the Fort Kevin Knox. Is he a day one starter?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, I didn't love the pick at pick 9. I didn't hate it, but I've given him, and I give all Kentucky players the benefit of the doubt because of the way that Calipari runs things in Kentucky. Most of their skills are muted, and we see different things from them. We saw it from Jamal Murray, from Devin Booker, from Karl Anthony Towns, from Trey Lyles, all these guys. I'm sure there's plenty of others that I'm missing, that when they come out from Kentucky, they do things like, oh, I didn't know he could necessarily do that. Malik Monk last season with his point guard play, which he didn't do at all at Kentucky. So Knox has that ability or that potential based on the situation, and he played out a position at Kentucky as well, but I still worry about his lack of peripheral numbers for his fantasy values. His assists, his steals, his blocks. He was tremendously inefficient at Summer League where he had a 33% usage. I think about a 45% true shooting. And I fear that that's going to be the case again for Knox. I wouldn't be surprised, James, if he scores over 15 points per game, but inefficiently, and then no other contributions in those other areas because he doesn't defend well. He doesn't block shots. He's not a strong rebounder. He doesn't pass. But did you see something from him say at Summer League that you went, oh, I wasn't expecting that from Kevin Knox?
Just the variety in his offensive game. You know, I did so much, amateur scouting on these guys leading up to the draft. And like you, I wasn't a big fan of him because what I saw a lot was, he did a lot of running off screens. He did a lot of just kind of parking in the corner, which is what he was asked to do, but he surprised me with his ability off the dribble. His shooting, I think he's going to be very inefficient. I do think he'll have games. He had a game in summer league where he hit something like five threes in the third quarter. So he's got this kind of, he's got a really good looking stroke. I think for his career, he's going to be a good shooter. You know, his freshman year, I'm not so sure. He had some ability, like passing ability. He might surprise, but he's, you know, by surprise, I mean, like, he might average like two assists a game. I don't, you know, expect too much more than that out of him. And, you know, for a wing, it's not a big assist position anyway. But, yeah, I think like you, he's going to score a lot on low efficiency this year.
He's going to play minutes. He's going to take shots. I think he scores probably over 15 points per game, and it can go higher than that. But I think his fantasy game is going to resemble someone like Andrew Wiggins, who will go out and score and not rebound or not assist or not get steals or not get blocks and be inefficient. And fantasy owners know how disappointing Andrew Wiggins is in that sort of a situation. Now, I love taking Knox in the last couple of rounds. I think it's a great opportunity. Someone coming in who can score points, who's going to have that opportunity, is going to be going, here's 30 minutes from the get-go. Look, let's go. Like, I'm happy with that. But if people are expecting him to be some sort of top 70, top 80 guy, you need to be able to do more than one thing to get to that level. And at this point, and until he's proven otherwise, I just don't think he can do that. You can score your 16 points per game. That's fantastic. But you've got to do something else in the positive as well. And that's where I sit with Knox at the moment. He could very easily surprise us. The opportunity is going to be there, but I think he's going to be one of those guys who puts up big scoring numbers, does it with a lot of flashy dunks, and people tend to overrate that, much like his summer league performance, which was impressive, but people are acting like that he was, you know, a lock for rookie of the year based on the fact that, yeah, he took every single shot that was available and missed the vast majority of them. But, you know, overall, he just bludgeoned everyone with volume and got those numbers up. So impressed for him, excited for him, but I think we need to just calm ourselves down. And if you're looking at him inside the top 100, I think that's a mistake. Now, the other guy, Mitchell Robinson, I thought he was unbelievably impressive. We hadn't seen him all season. In college, we know the Western Kentucky situation with him, but he came out, he was blocking every shot available pretty much. He was blocking threes. He was getting back to the rim, then challenging shots there. He was efficient finishing, rim running, alley-oops, strong rebounding. Everyone's excited. I think he's got top 50, 45 type upside at some point in the next 3 to 4 seasons, but he's got to be in that role like a Clint Capela, Rudy Gobert type of scenario. How long is it going to take for him to be installed, do you think, as the backup center on this team? Because even in 21 minutes a night, like, this is top 100, top 120 type numbers.
I don't think it's going to take too long. His competition is not very fierce. Nope. You know, Noah is gone one way or another, whether he's just sitting at home or he's stretched. I mean, and then you got who else?
Luke Cornett.
You got Luke Cornett.
That's it.
Really. Who has some good games. I wouldn't be surprised if Luke Cornett's out of the league in a couple years. I mean, I do like, in theory, his skill set of blocking shots and shooting threes, but he is not nearly the shot blocker that Robinson is. He figures to be a better shooter, at least right off the jump. But his defense leaves a lot to be desired. He's pretty slow-footed. He doesn't have a lot of good lateral quickness. So I think Mitchell Robinson, as long as he's not a disaster defensively, and when you watch Summer League, you know, he was kind of a little all over the place in that regard. He has such freakish athletic ability that he could recover from almost any sort of, like, sitting there with his thumb up his butt situation, not knowing what he was doing, and he could, like, run out and block a guy shooting a three when he's under the rim, you know. But I do think Fizdale's not going to let him play. He's just, like, completely out of it. But he has such – his physical tools are so unbelievable that even if he's, like, pretty subpar in his defensive awareness, he can make up for a lot of that. And I think within the first couple months, he's going to be the backup.
So he, to me, like Kevin Knox, is worthy of having a look just at that last round in a fantasy draft, because if he is coming in and playing 19 minutes a night straight away, you could be getting over 1.5 blocks. You could be getting 6 or 7 rebounds plus high quality percentage finishing. And then if somehow it develops into 24 or 25 minutes a night, then you've got a top 100 guy on your hands. Now, he's not, doesn't look like he's going to be a great free throw shooter. We'll see how that develops in the NBA. So that's something that you can look at. He doesn't, maybe he gets 5 assists for the season. Maybe we'll see how that develops. He's not a guy that's going to be an excellent passer or anything like that, but we know what he is. He's going to rebound. He's going to block. He's going to be efficient. And those numbers are really, really valuable. So he is someone. Again, we've got to look at the situation here. Who's here? It's Enes Kanter, no part of the future, no defense. Then it's Joakim Noah, who won't play, and Luke Cornett, who's not the prospect that Robinson is. So he's going to be in a role pretty much straight away, and that could really elevate as the season goes on. So he is really interesting. I think he's got potentially, personally, more a higher upside than Kevin Knox, and not just this season, but in his career. I think it's a great steal that they got there at pick 36. So we'll see how that all works out. The projected starting five, we had you sat on the fence a little bit here, James. So I'm going to call you out for that, because you had Frank Ntilikina / Trey Burke as the point guard. The other ones are fairly self-explanatory. Timmy Hardaway, Kevin Knox, Enes Kanter, and of course the free agent signing, the big acquisition, Mario Hezonja. I am glad that you put him there as the starting power forward / small forward. I think he was excellent last season. I think he's got a real chance to have a really strong season. I hope that David Fizdale doesn't go and rely on Lance Thomas to fill that role. That is a fear I constantly have, that Lance Thomas is going to take those minutes. But I really like the Hezonja signing, and I think he is in for a top 100 fantasy season. So even if it's only for the first 3 or 4 months until Porzingis returns, he's going to have a big start to the year.
Yeah, I mean, and he really kind of unlocked something when they switched him to the four last year in Orlando. So, you know, is he going to be an incredible player? I don't know. But I would be surprised if he didn't start the four right off the bat. He's got enough years under his belt where he can come in and understand whatever concept they're trying to do. In my defense, with my waffling, Fizdale's a new guy. If you had Hornacek this year, I'd be like, yeah, Lance Thomas is starting, no question. Ntilikina's not starting, no question. He's probably like demanding Jared Jack gets re-signed and forcing him back on the court.
Ramon Sessions is back.
But I think Hezonja could surprise some people. He's got some nifty court vision once in a while. He's got some good passes in transition. I don't expect big things from him, but I think the thing that's interesting about what I think is going to happen with Fizdale this year in lineups, like we talked about Ntilikina before, he's going to see a lot of time at the two. Also, he's going to see some time at the three. Likewise, Hezonja is going to see some time at the three. He might even play up at the five for a couple minutes here or there. So, like, you know, they're trying to build the switchability into their team, and I think you're going to see a lot of that, and some guys who you might have pegged for a fewer minutes than you think might surprise you.
Mario's a guy that hits threes, he gets steals, he's an okay rebounder for his position as well. He's going to score a little bit. He's not going to do big amounts in many different areas, but he's going to be a solid contributor right across the board. He's a good free throw shooter. He'll get to the line a little bit more, should see somewhat of a usage uptick this season. I think he's a strong pick. Yahoo's got him ranked 137th. ESPN has him ranked 229th. Just another egregious mistake on their behalf. So he is a guy, I think, especially for that first half of the season, he's a top 100 guy. Now, when Porzingis comes back, maybe he loses 3 to 4 minutes per night. I can easily see that being the case as Porzingis comes back in and he starts and Mario moves to the bench and plays backup three and backup four. But he's still going to be getting 27, 28, 26, that sort of range in terms of playing time, even when KP returns. And if you're taking him with the last pick, it's not great because you get to fantasy playoffs, I know, and the guy's value starts dipping. But he's put you in that position with maybe top 70 type production for the first 3 months, and then you move on and then you get somewhere else. So I think it's a great last pick to look at Hezonja. He's in a fantastic situation where no one is really established as this star who's taking all these shots, and he's going to have an opportunity and be able to do things in multiple areas. Plus, of course, most importantly, get the minutes, which is what we always enjoy for fantasy. I also believe Mitchell Robinson is a great value pick. ESPN's got him ranked 336th, and Yahoo has him at a baffling 572nd. I don't even think there's that many players in the NBA. So that's a that's a weird one to me. So of course there is value in Robinson there.
they're both going to be better than Moutier. Put that in the bag.
Yeah, Moutier at 46. I don't want to shortchange him. I didn't even list him as a bust on my sheet here because everyone knows that Moutier at 46 is nonsense. There's no need for it. Timmy Hardaway, they've got him at 66. I don't think that's a terrible spot for him, but I think if you're taking him there, you're probably missing someone who's a little bit better. But that's the only guy I went really looked at as a busty type guy for this team. I think we've covered most players on this team, but I do want to talk about Noel Vonleh, who came across late in the free agency process. James, he's a really strong rebounder. Is he an every night rotation guy, do you think, when Porzingis is out as that backup four? He can also play backup center. We're talking about who else can play at center. Vonleh can play there. I actually think he's not a bad guy on the glass. He's got to develop somewhat of an outside shot, but is he going to be getting regular minutes, do you think?
I'm not sure he's going to make the team.
Okay.
I think he probably will, but I'm not sure who they cut for him, honestly. They do like these former lottery guys. So I do think they want to give him a chance. That might be part of why they want to stretch Noah, although I think if that's the reason that they're insane, then I take everything back about them being a well-run franchise. There's an outside chance that he gets some minutes, but I wouldn't expect a lot out of him.
So they've currently got 17 guys under contract, including Kadeem Allen, and then they've got the two two-way players at the moment. So obviously two of those guys aren't going to make the final roster. You'd assume Allen is one of those, and then it does come down to whether it is Noah, whether it is Vonleh, whether it's Cornette, who they just recently signed, whether it is Baker that ends up going, Damian Dotson, the second round pick. So there is a couple of options.
Yeah, they might cut Dotson. Dotson might be the guy they cut. Vonleh might be a better pick to stick than Dotson.
I think Vonleh may stick just because of that Porzingis injury, just to give them some front court depth, because they don't have, as we said, we're trying to work out who the backup center is, and there's just not much there in that in that sort of an area. So maybe Vonleh gets to stick around just for that reason. I think that's pretty much all of these guys that we've spoken about on this team. Not much more to talk about here, James. We've covered it all off. Let everyone know, first of all, where they can find you on Twitter, and secondly, what's going on over at Locked On Knicks at the moment.
You can find me on Twitter, my personal account, so to speak, at NBA Injury Report. The E is a 3. You can also find Locked On Knicks account at Locked On Knicks. We are wrapping up our report card series finally for last year. We just did Tim Hardaway Jr. That's why I was able to spout that 31.7 three-point percentage off the dome the other night. We got Frank Ntilikina come up on Thursday, KP on Sunday. Next week, we got Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic, who does the Knicks beat over there. He's great. He's going to be on the podcast. We're going to start looking forward to next season finally. So a lot of fun stuff coming up, some new guests, and you guys should check it out.
Go and check out Locked On Knicks. Check out James at NBA Injury Report as well, which I'm sure you're already following. Go and do that. James, thanks for coming on once again to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball New York Knicks season preview show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Guys, make sure you are subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give a 5-star rating, give a thumbs up, leave a comment. You know the drill. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Tim Hardaway Jr.